Hello and welcome to the Label Sessions Presents podcast. Label Sessions is the world's leading innovation expert network. In this series, you will meet some of the most interesting leaders anywhere, from across the worlds of business, design, tech, culture, and sustainability, all signed to the Label Sessions roster. To find out more about our work, helping brands and institutions around the world take on their big challenges for the future, head to labelsessions.com to find out more. For now, enjoy the podcast.
Hello, Angelique. Thank you so much for, you know, taking the time to come on the podcast to talk all about the, you know, the future of work. Before we dive in, I wonder, could you give our listeners, you know, a quick introduction about yourself?
Of course, Keisha. Thank you for having me, first of all. And hello, yes. So my name is Angelique Slob. I am from the Netherlands. And I had a pretty standard life till I was in my early 40s, I suppose. I worked as an HR manager and later interim HR project manager in multinationals. And I did a lot of large corporate project mergers and acquisitions and restructuring processes. And I lived in a town in the countryside. And at one point, I got involved in the new way of working in those large companies that I worked in, mostly from the Netherlands, where that was a movement about flexibility and working where and when you want. I got involved in that, and I got actually very intrigued by workplace transformation towards more autonomous, results-driven organizations, and especially because I noticed how difficult it was for companies to make that transformation. So I started exploring that, and not only in the Netherlands. So I wrapped up my things and packed my suitcase and started traveling the world. And I spoke to many, many people that approach work very differently. So from startups to digital nomads to distributed teams and all kinds of self-managing teams in organizations. And I just explored for a good part of a few years. I embraced the possibilities of remote working, especially the strategic advantage that companies had. And this was around 8 years ago. And I started writing about it, sharing my methods. And at one point, I wrapped it up into more consulting services, bringing it also back to corporate, especially just before the pandemic hit, during and after pandemic, bringing a lot of the things that I've learned back to corporate, where I came from. So it's a pretty good combination. And I've basically been living the future of work a little bit myself, being an entrepreneur and living between the Netherlands, Portugal, and Brazil. And I work globally for forward-thinking people leaders from around the world, shaping them their future of work strategies.
Absolutely incredible. I remember the first time we jumped on a call together, you were tuning in from Brazil, and I was going, oh, it's beautiful and sunny. I was very envious. But yeah, I wonder, with all the stuff that you're doing, and obviously you're a futurist within all of, you know, the future of work, I wonder what kinds of things are you seeing as perhaps trends, or, you know, not just trends, but things that we should start thinking about? What should we look out for in the future of workspace?
That's a good question, and I'm happy that we have a chance to talk about that. So I predict that there's a lot of disruptors already happening or just around the corner that we don't really understand what the end of it is. So imagine that you go back 150 years and you're the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. You could not have even the Industrial Revolution started, and you could see things already happening and changing. It was very hard for a person at that time to predict what it would actually bring us in like 25 years, 50 years, 100 years. And I think the technical revolution or the information era of information technology is a disruptor that's been obviously going on since the 50s. And I think we're now entering the second phase of that revolution. It's not only AI that is bringing a quantum leap, but we face unseen demographic, socioeconomical, and political developments. And they are hugely impacting everything that we do, and work as an economical factor is in the center of it. So post-pandemic workplace design is just starting. Gen Z is becoming more prevalent in the workplace and are entering leadership positions as we speak. And we are facing global problems that scream for new innovation, new solutions, and new approaches. One of the things that I hope you can talk a little bit more about later is the lack of people who will actually do the jobs to maintain our living standards. And we can see, like in the Netherlands, it's more clear than in Brazil. I see just a lack of people, for example, in childcare, in construction. Try to get a plumber if your toilet is broken. It's just like, you know, those things that are happening, but they are also the start of that development. And we can see that becoming a larger problem in the future.
With that and all the things that you're saying, it almost seems like there's been, you know, a change in the way that we view, you know, what work means. Perhaps I know I'm coming from, let's say, the kind of the older end of Gen Z, and, you know, talking to friends, a lot of, you know, work isn't just a place. It just isn't where you go from, you know, 9 to 5, 9 to 6. It means so much more than that. I wonder, in your opinion, what place do you think work has in our lives today? So what, and also on leading on to that, what work do you think, you know, leaders and organizations need to do to embrace perhaps this new place that work has?
First of all, I would say that any generation now approaches work differently than they did, you know, when they were younger. So when I started working a long time ago, work was literally a very different place. I was in my first job for 3 years, and when I left, I think my parents got a heart attack because I had like a permanent contract. Although I was only 22 and I wanted to start traveling. And it was a very toxic work environment, so I had very good reasons to actually go. But you can see that already changed. Of course, now we are now also a lot of people, and I think it's also natural, both in people's progressing careers, but also the zeitgeist, that we approach work differently. Young generation born in a different context also, of course, brings that new set of expectations from the beginning. And I think just going back and zooming out a little bit, I think we have to understand that the place work has in our lives is still very, very much determined by the industrial work design. And there we can start seeing more and more tension, because we are no longer working in an industry. You and me are not working in a factory. And most of the listeners here are not working on the floor in a factory or being the manager in a factory. So that means that the workplace design and what we actually want and need and expect, there is a gap, and that is starting to becoming, that tension is getting more and more clear. For example, the return to office mandates are a great example. So it's basically the idea 8 hours a day from 9 to 5 in a specific location where you're supposed to do your work. And there is an aim of productivity and input and all those conscious or even unconscious belief systems around work are on the base of the return to office mandates. It's really a time and presence mindset. Well, the nature of most of our work, but and our society and our personal needs, are now demanding more and more flexibility, because we also need no longer input, we need output. And manual inputs, like, you know, doing some like movements that create, you know, processing some things that create another thing, is very different than having an idea. That I ask a lot of people, like, when do you get your best ideas? And 90% of the people say, well, I'm in the shower. And it's not like, oh, I go to this factory or go to my office and I sit there 8 hours, and then by the end of the day, I've produced an idea. It's just not how it works. And I can't put it more simple, simpler and obvious than this. But it is the idea behind the way a lot of people approach work. And this is just, so it goes further than hybrid working alone. And I think we'll be talking about it a little bit more as well in this conversation. It is not about flexibility as in working 2 days from home, but it's flexibility in all kinds of levels and being able to thrive and get more autonomy and having that space that people need. And I think this is one example where organizations need, where leaders need to embrace that new context of work.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think that there's been very much a divergence in what, you know, organizations have done. Either people are really embracing it, saying, you know, either fully remote, or, you know, you can work abroad, or, you know, some people work longer hours, but then take, you know, like take Fridays off, or, you know, something like that. There's more flexibility. That's one way. And then the other way that I'm seeing is people are, you know, post pandemic are really stamping down and going, no, we're going to go back to how it was before. There seems to be, you know, two different ways organizations are going. So I find it really interesting.
Yeah. There's definitely a focus on that. So again, as I told you in the beginning, I'm like in the Netherlands, even the first major companies in the 1990s embraced more flexible work schemes. So for us, it's like probably, you know, the second generation is entering the workforce that has that, has some, to some extent, that flexibility. But I think also in the Netherlands, the pandemic has changed that flexible work schemes, where maybe in the beginning people would be, you know, just starting a little bit later and leaving a little bit later, or have like, you know, 4x9, or have like a flexible, like a part-time day. I think now the working from home has become more structural. So also there we see a change. But I think it is the wrong discussion to have, because we already had the flexible schemes, and also a lot of companies had locations in different countries and people would be traveling. So in that sense, hybrid is not really new. And I think it's a huge distractor of where we should be talking about.
Mm-hmm. And I guess in your experience, what role does, you know, scarcity thinking play in, you know, hindering the adoption of, you know, HR practices? And how can organizations, you know, shift towards embracing, you know, abundance and collaboration and that kind of mindset?
I'm speaking a lot about it lately, and scarcity thinking is another example of how we are rooted in this industrial mindset. So back to the factory, of course, the resources there were very, very limited. People, you know, the workforce needs to be able to travel. It was usually the male, usually the men. The factory needs to have their machines and everything that, you know, has a limited capacity. You cannot have like endlessly increase the speed of the machines, because manual labor is at the end of its you know, peak at probably 8 hours a day. That's where the 8 hour workday come from, and the 3 shifts. So that was optimized. So that is all very in terms of scarcity. Well, we now fast forward to an age of technology, and where we're working remotely, where we connect from all over the world. As you say, I'm now in the Netherlands, then I was in Brazil, you are in the UK. We have so many people in the world that we can collaborate with almost no limitations. What we are producing and the resources that we use are our creativity, our brains, our expertise, and we are coming up with ideas in collaboration. Those things are infinite. So there is an abundance of the things that we need, both in the sense that we're working with this as resources, but also in the outputs. And it's a very, if you look at it, there's such a different mind shift. And I can feel my body responding when I'm talking about the first situation where things are limited and it's difficult and there's not money, and, you know, the factory is like, and the machine stopped, and now there's no output, and it's all very in that feeling that is more heavy and closed. While we talk about creativity and the limitless possibilities of ideas and innovation that we can create working together on a global scale, I feel more expansive and I feel more calm. And working with leaders from around the world is very interesting to see if you can bring them to that state.
Definitely. It's just kind of exactly what you were saying. It's not just that you need to get the people just, you know, close to the factory in the village or the town near you. You can do it globally now. And also with that, it's not just how physically strong you are anymore. It's kind of the, you know, how mentally strong you are. It's about ideas, exactly what you were saying. So we just have, it's more of a, you know, a bigger pool of talent and, you know, things to be thinking about. So yeah.
Yeah. And bring it more down to earth decision-making and policies and innovative people strategies. So I've been working also, I've been developing a leadership session where we look at those things from an abundance, the lens of an abundance mindset. And it seems that you make different decisions and you come up with better solutions when you do that from the lens of abundance rather than the lens of scarcity. And so if the scarcity mindset is like keeping the narrative alive, there's a war on talent and we have to pay higher salaries and we have to and we can't take that client or we can't grow that because there's a war on talent. That's from basically like a very clear example from a scarcity mindset narrative that is very, very persistent. Well, if we zoom out and we say, well, is there really a war on talent? Because there is a lot of hidden talents. And if we move to flexible working or expand our working hours or we give more, we hire more flex freelancers, then maybe there isn't a war on talent at all. And there's plenty of people out there for us.
And when you're seeing, you know, the companies that you're working with or perhaps, you know, examples online, what are the, you know, forward-thinking HR policies and things that you see today kind of for companies and organizations that are, you know, progressive and you think, oh, no, they're very much keeping up with where the future of work is going? What are they doing?
So I always say there's no blueprint for the future of work, but there are, of course, there are things that they have in common, and there's definitely some boxes that a progressive company should take. But I see a few examples that are like doing it well on, you know, on most of the teams. There I'm happy to see that, and also happy to see that there are leading companies as well that are fast growing and successful. For example, Remote is one, Atlassian is one. And what you can see is that they are approaching more a life-centric approach than a work-centric approach. And they offer work from anywhere. So it's like fully distributed. People can literally work from anywhere in the world. They are very flexible in their hours because they work async. Not maybe both do everything to the same extent, but they're definitely, you know, they're common. You can point those things out if you just, you know, put the spotlight on the companies. They would have unlimited holidays. And also another thing is that they are moving into equal global pay. So they do not make a difference in salaries while hiring someone from Brazil or someone from the UK or someone from the Philippines. And they are putting people, what they do in common, apart from like the execution of the policies itself, they do put people at the heart of their workplace. And they're creating a culture where people take care of themselves and their family and their mental health and their well-being first in order to thrive at work and be collaborative and show up as their best self.
Almost with that, with the point that you said about being life-centric and not just work-centric, I wonder, maybe it's just a trend that I'm at least picking up. I'm not sure if it's been a trend for a while, but it seems like a lot of companies, you know, are changing, you know, what they stand for, what they believe in. It's not just profit anymore. It's like, no, we stand for, you know, whether it's sustainability or, you know, the ESG things we stand for, you know, they point out all different things and the values. They kind of focus on the values now, not just profit, success, you know. And I wonder, do you see that also happening more? And B, kind of, if so, how can companies almost redefine their organizational values to perhaps, you know, better align with what, you know, they're seeing in the public, in social, in society, and also the evolving needs and expectations of employees?
That's definitely it. So I think we can see that if you look at the company itself, moving from work-centric to life-centric, And bringing a different culture into the organization, but it's also to import it to include like broader like stakeholders. So for example, we have a more diverse workforce than ever, and that will be becoming even more diverse because even if, just because we need all those talents. So there is like companies that are really at the forefront of building a diverse and inclusive workforce are most likely to end up in front of the race. But there's like global challenges as climate. So it is about sustainability as well. Focusing on trust and collaboration, also personal growth, using AI for good. All those elements you want to be reflected in the workplace. But it's also a relationship, how you build with clients and the kind of clients you want to work with. Hiring people from different parts of the world and from different backgrounds and treating them equally and giving them equal opportunities. And it needs to be so much internalized in the way or companies think. And it's somebody said to me, well, I often hear people making all the right noises. And I was like, that's exactly. But when the going gets tough, when we see layoffs, the first people that are being laid off are often people, for example, the head of diversity and inclusion. And even if there would be that position, and I don't say that position isn't important, but if you think if you're done with hiring a head of diversity and inclusion in the first place, it is not enough. And second of all, if that person is the first one to have to be made redundant when we have to cut costs, then we can see that it wasn't internalized in the organization. And especially a lot of people actually are no longer accepting that, and especially younger generation employees, when they pick up on that tension between what has been said or what has been marketed or employer branded, and if it is not the actual, it's actually different when they experience the company, they are very, very likely to leave within the first year. And that is very, very costly for an organization. So having those values, traits, working on internalizing them is going to give you a very sustainable, building a sustainable organization with a lot of return on investment on putting the effort in there.
It shows it's not just, you know, the messaging and, you know, just saying it because it sounds good. When a company really believes it and when you're inside, you can really see it, then, you know, people are like, no, I want to work for the company. At this company, it stands for the right things. I'm aligned with it. But yeah, I guess picking up on the end bit that you said about Gen Z, you know, myself being the older end of Gen Z, I guess, and with us kind of not just entering the workforce, but starting to get to the stage of, you know, managers and perhaps higher up position, I wonder what are some key considerations for HR leaders now in terms of, you know, adapting to, you know, the preferences and expectations of, you know, the newer generation, Gen Zs, and then soon to be, you know, Gen Alphas when they come in.
Yeah, I think we touched on the expectations a few times already in this conversation. So, and maybe some people are like, you know, rolling their eyes and thinking, well, we pay a salary, so we ask people to adjust, or this is not going well because they come with some, this generation comes with expectations that we cannot meet and we're not willing to meet. So for that, for people that have that feeling and in general for everybody. So what I noticed is that the characteristics of Gen Z is pretty much the same all over the world. Now, I've been speaking to many people from different countries. So it is a characteristic. Of course, there are individual differences and also cultural differences, but we see they're the same like main elements you can see with everybody. We also have to understand that we will not be able to change the generation just because we need to hire some people in our workforce. It's not happening. At the same time, there is a huge risk between that gap of the difference between the expectations and needs of the younger generation and the expectations and needs of the companies. And I hear a lot of my clients also asking me that what they can do to attract and retain the young generation, because it's very costly and companies are being stopped in their growth because they cannot hire enough people to meet their needs to grow. And if that is a development that is will be there for like another 5 or 10 or 20 years, we have created a large problem, not only for those companies, but for our society and economy in general. So it is a very important call for not only HR leaders, but also CEOs and COOs and CFOs to understand that organizations need to meet that young generation where they are, because that's not what you're going to change. And then you meet them where they are, and then you involve them in workplace transformations. Most people involved in workplace transformations, policies, innovative people, HR strategies, are people that are from different older generations. I've been in podcasts where I was looking around, so I was like, we're talking about young generations, and we're all like 50 plus here. So it's why are we having this conversation? Why is there not? Why haven't we invited anybody from like that age group? So I befriended a young Gen Z who is very intelligent and very critical on society. And when I was in Brazil, we spent a lot of time together, and I picked his brain whenever I could. I picked his brain about everything. And that was very, a lot of eye-openers for me, and it was very interesting to do so. And it did change my perspective on things. It did change my vision. So involve those people, the young generation in your organization, into that workplace transformation. I spoke to a young millennial HR director, and she had the habit to call all, they had a lot of 22, 21-year-olds. And she was like, I'm calling them all. I try to call all of them once a month, once every 2 months, asking them what they need, what they want, what they suggest for improvements. And that is a very, very active HR, like, you know, it's bottom-up driven policy-making and culture building. But she also said, and I never forgot it, she said, this is the most disruptive thing that we're going to be seeing in the workplace. And she based that on asking people questions. And also want to say, because there's also a scarcity narrative saying people from large companies, they're very distant between them, the leaders. It is the distance between them and young generation is too big, so they don't understand what's going on because they're sitting there. And my counter question is always like, don't they have children? You know, especially that generation often have children in that generation. So if you don't involve them in your workplace, at least ask them during dinner what they'd expect from an employer.
And it sounds like that's kind of almost the difference in the role of, you know, leadership, how it's evolving. You know, it's not just, you know, the hierarchical, I sit on the top here and you do what I say. It's kind of coming down, say, you know, how are things going? What's actually happening with you? What do you think? And then taking that back up to decisions. I know it's not so totally new, but at least it seems like it's more transparent.
Yeah, and I don't think it's like asking individuals what they specifically want. I wouldn't, like, that's not my style as an organizational consultant or even when I was HR director. I always say never make policies for individuals, and meaning the exception. Organization from an HR policy standard view, you have to make the policy way broader than it was. So if it comes to like your flexible work policy, you know, give them, just make, widen it as much as you can, broaden it as much as you can. It's very important to involve people into a workplace transformation as part of a project. I am more like not asking individuals what they want and seeing how you can fit it in, but involve them actively in project groups, in circles, where they might be, where you might form a mix of people from different departments of your company, maybe from different countries, from different age groups, involve freelancers, involve a philosopher, involve people from all kinds of different perspectives and angles. And also do not just look at what you need as an organization, but broaden the scope a little bit into what's happening in the world around you. So I'm an organizational sociologist, and as a sociologist, I cannot see an organization as an island. We have to understand that there are broader developments around us that are affecting our strategies and our policies. So, and yes, and then it is about a shift in leadership thinking. As I talked about industrial mindset versus, you know, knowledge worker mindset, scarcity mindset into abundance mindset. Those are both quite important, but it's also understanding that a Band-Aid is not enough. And innovation, organizational innovation is key. And it is also experimenting. So this is where it gets interesting, I think. Get all those different people together and talk about business cases and make sure that you look at them from a lens of diversity and inclusivity and so asking everybody's voice, creating that space for everybody and looking from a lens of abundance and see what you come up with. I would like to know.
Yeah, no, absolutely wonderful. And I think that's a nice point at the end of kind of, you know, start that conversation and like start reflecting on it. So yeah, thank you so much. But yeah, I guess kind of to wrap things up, we always do a little quick fire questions at the end of each episode, just to kind of get to know you a little bit more. We know a lot about your expertise, but you know, we don't know enough about you, Angelique. So we have a few quick fire questions. The first one being, you know, is there anything that you think is overhyped when people talk about the future of work? Or is there something, you know, alternatively, that is not being picked up by the mainstream that you think is interesting?
Well, the return to office and hybrid discussion is overhyped. And it's often, it's based on polarization and not on the right data. The deeper problems that we face as organization and society are really, really overlooked. So in 20 years, we will have one person doing the work of three people of today. And that means that we really, really need to rethink work and also the place it has in our lives. I don't see a lot of that discussion is just not happening.
Something to see pick up maybe in another episode. Maybe we would bring you back and discuss all about that. Next question. So what was the first work thing you were really proud of?
I think that was in my first ever HR role. So I worked at KPMG in the Netherlands. And that's like over 20 years ago. And I was involved in HR and recruitment, and I came up with an innovative idea to deal with the lack of candidates. And there was also a lack of candidates. The war on talent was already happening. And I came up with an innovative idea to help the organization. And I think I was even still an intern or temping. I was just really in the beginning of my time there. But I told the HR director, and he looked at me and said, okay, just write me a detailed project plan over the weekend. He was telling it was Friday, and I wanted it on Monday. We can have talked about it on Monday. So I spent my weekend on writing a project plan. And then it got approved by the partners, and I was the one executing it as well. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, fantastic. Next question. In another life, what would your career be?
A sheep herder.
Interesting.
Or the other one is, and that could be even more likely that what might ever happen, selling coconuts on the beach in Brazil.
That sounds good. Fresh coconuts. We don't have a lot of that over here. So that sounds like a good plan. But yeah, I have, one last question for you. It's a question that everyone on the podcast is asked. Angelique, on a scale of 1 to 10, how weird are you and why?
Well, I would definitely say 8.
You seem very definite in that.
Yeah, don't insult me by saying I'm not real. Well, the thing is that I think if you really are able to bring a different voice and see how things can improve and how and to drive change, you need to and make choices that also give you new perspectives, which I've done like a lot. Now you have to be a little bit weird, pretty weird. So I think the world needs people that are weird in leadership positions. And there we come to the good old diversity debate again. But then also, yeah, I'm good in pretending to be normal, like most of us.
There's the what comes up naturally and what you kind of you put on. So I get it. I very much get it. But yeah, on that note, thank you so, so much for, you know, coming on the podcast and sharing your expertise and advice. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the conversation. Thank you so much for having me.
As we close out another episode, make sure to like, subscribe, and follow us on our social channels. Want to access Label Sessions for your brand? Whether you want to build new products, access world-class mentors for your team, or reinvent the way you attract talent into your business, visit Label Sessions to find out more.